Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, when it was first published, Lyle Stewart, the publisher, they broke both of his legs and sent him down to Jamaica just as it was being published. They sent him down to Jamaica to recuperate.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Labour Oxford economist and Irish Republican Martin Summers, Kevin Carhill and me, Tony Gosling. If you thought it was just Muslims the New World Order want to massacre, think again. Well, with Notre Dame burning down and 350 Sri Lankan churchgoers, 45 of them children, massacred on Easter Sunday, there's no cause here, it's just pure evil. Anyone would think there was no God. What was the whole idea? Like the previous attacks on Egyptian churches, to seed exactly this inter-religious hatred. So India warned Sri Lanka the church bombers were coming, but the defence minister, who's now resigned, and the police chief didn't pass the warning on to the people who needed to know. Government minister Harin Fernando in Sri Lanka apparently warned his son not to go to church that morning. But what are the wider accusations from Israeli-backed site intelligence and others that ISIS were behind the attack? Speculation that it was retribution for Christchurch? Israelis Pamela Geller and Rita Katz seem to know everything about the attacks almost immediately. How do they know so much and use that to steer the news agenda? Are they the world's best intelligence service, or were they connected to the perpetrators? And how does killing children help your cause? Why would a suicide bomber attack a soft target when it's easy to just put down a bag, walk off and detonate the bomb around the corner? Did they know their rucksacks contained bombs? Were the bombs pre-planted? So many questions not asked by our journalists as peaceful New Zealand and now Sri Lanka too is dragged in to the global war on terror. Also in Derry, journalist Lyra McKee shot dead on Maundy Thursday. But why were the PSNI doing a sectarian fishing operation, provoking the riots that killed her? Why haven't the top cops resigned? And over in Malaysia, keep saying we're going to talk about this, we will this week. Goldman Sachs secretly buying off top politicians, but all exposed in Malaysia, with a $4.5 billion 1MDB scandal. And we look this week at secret society's attempt to hijack politics and religion. But we start this week, Martin, with the attacks in Sri Lanka. Pretty horrific. 350 dead, nearly 50 of them children. What can be the point of such an attack?
We've got to think about, you know, the perpetrators and the possible links to outside. I mean, they're already saying that there's linkages to outside forces.
Well, they definitely said that it's an international terror network of some sort. What might that terror network be?
Well, ISIS, as everybody in the Middle East will tell you, is basically a front organisation for the Saudis and the Western powers. So if it is ISIS, and of course that's a big if, then of course they're potential perpetrators. And of course the white helmets who were aligned with ISIS inside Syria were rescued from Syria by the Israelis. So around the world, most Muslims know that the very extreme Wahhabi terrorists are linked to the Saudis and therefore to us.
Well, this is curious, isn't it? Because ISIS, one would have thought, if they're a radical Islamic group, might have attacked Israel, but they haven't done so.
Well, that's right.
Why not?
Well, because they're basically, if you remember, the whole creation of the Islamic International Brigades was created under Operation, Operation Cyclone in the 1980s. Yeah.
So in Afghanistan,
and the refugee camps in Pakistan, and everybody who knows, and that's, you know, not the majority of the world's population, but those who know about such things know that these organisations have an intimate relationship with Western intelligence services and with the Israelis.
Okay, our sister show Dialects here on BCFM on Tuesday at noon this week. Born in Bristol, it's all about Extinction Rebellion. Talking to thinkers and activists behind the new environmental campaign that's been rocking London and the world. But also, German All Smoke and Mirrors blogger Manfred Petrisch talks about the Easter terror attacks, the real purpose, what he thinks anyway, and why he thinks the same, not different networks may be behind both the Christchurch mosque shootings and the Sri Lanka church bombings. You can listen here at BCFM 93.2 to those interviews at noon next Tuesday, or download the show now from dialectradio.co.uk. Do you think any connections, either of you, between Christchurch and Sri Lanka?
I think,
if so, what?
Well, whenever these incidents occur, there's two possibilities. Either it is a random incident where somebody's decided to do something and they haven't really got much outside backing.
It doesn't look very random.
No, but there's also a Gladio is the code name for what NATO was doing in Western Europe during the 40s onwards and into the present day, of basically running terror networks. And what you do if you're running a Gladio strategy of tension, or strategia di tensione, as they call it in Italy, you have left-wing or supposedly radical groups on one side and then other groups on the other side, and you're actually running both sets of groups in order to militarise the society so that you can then carry through your agenda. And of course Sri Lanka is actually, and don't forget there's a lot of people being killed in Sri Lanka in the north. The Tamil Tigers were completely eliminated, but they were eliminated by mass massacre of the population, in which at least 30,000 people died when they were wiped out, 30,000 civilians.
This is 10 years ago.
So Sri Lanka is not a peaceful place. It's become a peaceful place because it's a place for the graveyard, but it's always been a place of violence. But Sri Lanka's politics with its current regime is aligning with China and Pakistan. And of course India did intervene in the Sri Lankan civil war at one stage to try and crush the Tigers, which were their proteges, and that led to the death of Rajiv Gandhi and so on. So you should always think that this is not just Islamists attacking Christians in Sri Lanka because of religious bigotry. There's a bigger agenda.
What about the role of Pamela Geller, Rita Katz and Site Intelligence? Because these people at AMAC News Agency comes up with these various videos, and it almost seems, well, in fact, in some cases, it happens that Katz and Geller come up with these videos before they've even been released.
Well, they're almost like the PR department for ISIS. Although, you know, their site website is searching the internet for terrorist entities. Now, of course, Rita Katz's father was assassinated by Saddam Hussein because he was a spy inside Iraq, and she's an Israeli spy, basically based in Langley, Virginia, living around the corner from
actually,
the CIA.
I thought it was Bethesda, Maryland, which is actually only a few hundred yards.
Well, exactly. I'm just saying. And of course, as you say, she comes up that when they're having all the ISIS beheading videos in Syria, she was the one who was propagating the videos. She was the first one to put them up there.
Well, we've discovered
this online.
Well,
look at these people being beheaded.
You know, billions were spent by the Pentagon, but given to Bell Pottinger to manufacture many of these videos.
Yes, I mean, they've already admitted that they basically manufactured a lot of so-called Al-Qaeda videos, which were up on YouTube. And they manufactured the videos so that anybody who logged onto them could then be checked by the NSA of who they were and so on. But in actual fact, my own suspicion about all of these attacks is they're orchestrated from inside the Western intelligence services working with the Israelis in order to create a new world order.
Well, Kevin is chomping at the bit here, but before we hear from him, we're going to go to Abkhazia, to our Swiss, German, Argentinian, Australian, German blogger Manfred Petrisch. He's from the All Smoke and Mirrors blog. It's all in German, but of course you can get one of these internet translation services to translate his articles. And he's one of the first go-to places I have a look whenever there's one of these attacks. And he had quite a lot to say about what he thinks the links between Christchurch and Sri Lanka may be, and it's not necessarily what the mass media has been telling us.
Let's say if I were a real terrorist, then I would not attack metro systems and trains and airplanes where I always kill civilians, or I drive a truck into a Christmas market like in Berlin where I kill innocent people. or hear a people sitting in a church, that already shows to me that this is not a real terror attack. It is just to cause hate. And because if I'm a real terrorist, I would attack those guys who actually caused the wars. I mean, the people on top, but not innocent people. Isn't it interesting that nobody who caused the Iraq war, like Bush and Tony Blair, they never get attacked. Nobody attacks them. And all the other people who caused all the wars, or Hillary Clinton who caused the Libyan war, I mean, they're not being attacked. It's always innocent people being attacked.
Well, what about the idea of, I mean, you're someone who's been in the military, a suicide bomber. You don't really need to be a suicide bomber to attack a soft target like a church.
You see, what you do is you recruit a patsy. And what you do is you tell him, look, you go with this rucksack, you go over there, and whatever, you play a role, and then you remote control and ignite this bomb without the guy actually doing it. He doesn't even know that he's carrying a bomb. He's just told to go from A to B and be there at a certain time, and then from remote control you ignite the bomb. I mean, this happens. There are many cases where this happens. I think there's something similar happened at the London bombing.
Well, I mean, we don't know what happened, Kevin, but that's certainly one sort of possibility that hasn't really been explored by the media coverage, and it seems possibly maybe being looked in by the Sri Lankan police, but certainly not by the mass media.
But there's another point, and I think it always puzzles me. The Quran expressly forbids the murder of innocents. You know, anybody who claims to be a Muslim and then kills children is totally contrary to the strictest rules in the Quran. So, first, that's the first question. But the second question is different. In any given human population, you will always find psychopaths. And nobody here in the United Kingdom has ever even discussed what the mass surveillance of our population is actually doing. Finding the psychopaths, the intelligence services need to go out and commit atrocities on both sides. If you're doing mass surveillance, you can, through indicative analysis, you can pick out the kids who are most likely to go out and do damage. And I think there is a hidden... Mass surveillance is bad enough as it stands, but there's a far awfuler purpose behind it, which is to locate the psychopaths that can be sent out to do terrible things.
And the result of it is seeding into religious hatred. That seems to be the key, both in Christchurch and Sri Lanka, and both in countries that are really distancing themselves from this whole war on terror agenda up until Easter.
Yeah, it's... You said something interesting, interreligious hatred. Well, most of the Catholics I know don't hate Muslims. However, there is a terrible history on both sides. When the Teutonic Knights arrived in what is now called Prussia, they murdered everybody. The history is dreadful. But then, come back to it here, much bigger populations, the bad guys need to find out who the psychopaths are so that they can guide them in something like the way Tony has just said. Where do they find the psychopaths? This is how they do it.
Well, one of the things I have not seen very much of is the some of the people in Sri Lanka, what they're saying is actually, no, there will be no retribution for this. It's a kind of letter of forgiveness, which I'll share on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. It says, we appreciate you made the effort to find out the timing of our Mass. We appreciate you learnt more about our religion to know that Sundays are the days we go to church for the congregational prayers and the Mass. But I guess there were some things you rather unfortunately didn't get to learn. Perhaps you didn't know that what you did made them martyrs, and how you've single-handedly raised the status of our brothers and sisters in the eyes of their beloved Jesus with your actions, and how through your actions there will be raised in the most righteousness. And also, I mean, this letter goes on. I won't read it all out, but it's really saying that what you've done is you've just highlighted how much we as a congregation feel strong. So they haven't had the effect that I suppose they wanted to, which was to make these people feel that they wouldn't go to church again. Now, we've heard on the news just the last day or so that certainly parts of the Catholic Church are saying that they won't be holding masses, but it seems that some of the people in the congregation will be getting together anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, this would be the classic modern Catholic response. Catholicism nowadays is fairly substantially free of the kind of lunacy that the Islamic fringe is up. But as I say, you need to repeat, you can't kill children if you're a good Muslim. And wonder why then they're able to persuade people to go. And I think there's a lot in Martin's theory that a lot of these people go out with a rucksack, not realizing that it's some screwball around the corner from somebody's intelligence service going to press the button.
I mean, if people are listening on Tuesday lunchtime, Manfred talks, Martin, about this whole idea of these two attacks seem to be, he thinks, done by the same terror network, the purpose being to seed interreligious hatred. And he quotes the example that I quoted at the start, which is the Coptic Christian Cathedral in Egypt, which it was proven that the Interior Ministry were behind the planting of the bombs before the Modi administration under Mubarak there, in order to do exactly that, to seed into religious hatred. Now, what is the purpose? What is the point of that? And obviously we can see that in the bigger picture, there is this conflict going in the Middle East, only in the Middle East, isn't there, between the Jewish and the Christian Zionists on the one hand, and the Muslims of Iran and Pakistan. So do you think there's any possible connection between the two?
I think you're putting your finger on pretty much on it. You've got to remember that there is also a geopolitical battle going on, hybrid warfare, they call it. The Sri Lankan government basically is signing up to the Chinese One Belt One Road project. They're basically taking loads of investments from China. They're going to have big deep water ports and so on, which will allow the Chinese merchant navy access to the Indian Ocean, etc., etc. The Indians don't like that. The Americans don't like that. And what happens is it's like a mafia style thing. So yeah, accidents can happen to people who do sign deals with people that they shouldn't be signing deals with. Yeah? Do you know who the big boys on the block around here are? That's us, the Research and Analysis Wing of the Indian Army. And I think they have been orchestrating Muslim attacks inside India in order to try and make the Muslims look bad, in order to keep the right-wing in power and so on.
Explain what's been going on in Kashmir and also the Modi election.
Well, there's electioneering going on in India. It's a long time, you know, their elections take a month, so they're, it's going on and they're voting. It's not a one-day thing because it's such a big country and lots of people can't read, you know. But Modi's trying to get re-elected, and he's quite unpopular because one of the things he did is he tried to abolish cash, which pretty much wiped out the small business sector in India and the small farmers in there, so they're all furious about it. It didn't work.
That was on behest of a lot of these big Western.
Yeah, it was on the behest of USAID.
This is almost a kind of guinea pig experiment.
It's a guinea pig experiment by USAID and the IMF, yeah, of course it is. And of course, he's therefore very unpopular, so what he's doing is banging the nationalist drum, which is why he stirred a lot of stuff up in Kashmir. And of course that backfired, because when they they killed a lot of Indian soldiers in Kashmir. It was quite a good hit. Is that terrorism? I don't know. They're all soldiers, but they were very annoyed about it. And of course Kashmir doesn't really want to be part of India. It's quite clear it never did want to be part of India. Whether it wants to be put part of Pakistan is another question. But of course all of these conflicts are there. And of course, the Chinese are talking about what is effectively a Marshall Plan for the Third World, which, because they've got spare capital and they want to invest it. These communists, they've got big ideas, you know.
Okay, let's just.
And of course, the Americans and the British and the Israelis, they don't want that.
One of the things that bothers
the Indians
me,
don't want it either.
One of the things that bothers me most is this just repeating this mantra of suicide bomber, suicide bomber, suicide bomber, without any actual evidence of these people being deliberately suicide bombers. I mean, Kevin, what do you make of this whole thing of the potential of actually blowing up a church without having to kill yourself? It just seems that the whole idea of a suicide bomber is that you've got to be against a hard target. I mean, a shopping centre, a train, a bus is not. You could just leave a bomb there and walk off and blow it up. So why a suicide bomber in a church?
No, the churches, I think, are deliberate targets. And I think you're being a tiny bit naive. There are suicide bombers in the world.
Well, I'm not saying they aren't, but I'm saying is, at this point, we don't have any evidence of these guys being suicide bombers.
Can I come in? The reason you have a suicide bomber, just like on 7/7 in this country, is because then it's all clear immediately who did it. Oh, it's these guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they're all dead. So you don't have to have any proper police investigation. And so the people who really did it can then walk away. That's what it's about.
Very interesting point. Right. Also, remote detonation. I mean, is this person actually aware that they're carrying a bomb? They maybe think they're carrying something else. I mean, these are another possibility, Martin.
Well, that's true. Years ago, I was in Belfast, and they explained to me what happened. People were explaining to me what happened on the Poppy Day bombing, if you remember that, when the attack on
Enniskillen.
Enniskillen. Yeah. And these guys were telling me in the pub, they said, well, actually, it was an IRA bomb. The bomb was planted by the memorial, and the idea was that when everybody had dispersed and had all gone home, there'd still be police and army wandering around just having a look to see what was going on. They were just trying to kill a couple of soldiers or a couple of coppers. But MI5 had broken into the operation, and they pressed the button for the bomb while everybody was there, so they actually killed the civilians that were there, and the people that were in uniform, some of them, of course, because it was a military kind of parade. But the IRA pretty honest about saying what they've done. I mean, the guy from the Birmingham bomb, they came forward not long ago and said, yes, we did it. Yeah, that's the whole thing about the way they operate. Yeah. Well,
wasn't that 30 years late?
It's 30 years late, but the point is, they said from the get-go that they did it. They never said we didn't do it.
Okay, way back in February 2007, I had an article published in the Journalist magazine called Bombers Away, where I looked at the April 2004 situation in Iraq, where Bush's Iraq chief, Paul Bremer, had initiated the Iraqi insurgency, I think it's the Shia insurgency, by closing down the Al-Sadr newspaper. Well, why did he close it down? The editor had printed a front page lead story that a suicide bomb the previous week in a bus queue was, according to the eyewitnesses, actually a missile fired from a helicopter. The newspaper was closed down by the US Army the next day.
That's right. I mean, what they're doing all the time is divide and rule.
And of course
there are psychopaths who are suicide bomb, that you can find a few of them. But actually, to be honest with you, if you're going to actually do anything serious, you've got to have a patsy that looks as if they've done it, and you usually need a professional to blow stuff up. You know, you can't. All the so-called 7/7 bombs supposedly mixed all this stuff up. They never admitted what the explosive was, because there was a French police officer who came out of Scotland Yard on the day and said, "We're really worried about this because he's in C4 explosive, which is basically NATO standard explosive." And then there was a whole farrago of nonsense about how they made it out of peroxide in a bath and all the rest of it. In actual fact, blowing things up is a technical issue. You need technicians to do it. You can't just do it if you downloaded stuff off the internet. That's rubbish.
I think, but Martin, you made a massive, enormous point there. I've not heard anywhere on any of the mass media anywhere in the world, all of the billions of pounds that get spent on it, which is, it's very handy with a suicide bomber because there's no trial afterwards.
That's right. You don't have to investigate at all. We all know what happened.
I'll just leave you first, Kevin, to say what you make of the interreligious hatred. What's the point of all that?
Well, having spent time in a Christian monastery and served in the army in the Yemen, I still go back to the basics. There's a history of violent hatred in the history of both Christianity and Islam. By and large, and in most countries, that's past. But there are always people, I call them psychopaths, but that's covering more than the word covers, who can be wired up and wound up to go and do terrible things. And I think there's a lot in what Tony has just said. We need to look much more closely. I mean, look at one of the worst bombings in Ireland, where there's been no prosecution by the state, OMA. And it's reasonably clear that the surveillance knew what was going on, knew what was happening. But fine, why haven't we prosecuted them?
Well, I mean, I can remember listening to a live report on, I think it was on 5 Live at the time, hearing the BBC reporter on the ground there saying that the local people had said that the police were directing them towards the bomb. They had a warning, but the police were saying go this way, and they were directing them towards the bomb.
I think that's being too kind.
Whether that's true,
I think as a matter of fact, some of the police directions wound up with people literally walking into the bomb. But I'm inclined to think that that was innocent.
Any connection, Martin? I'm going to ask you again with what's going on in the Middle East.
I'll just say the Dublin and Monaghan bombs in 1972, which were the single biggest death toll of the Troubles, more than Omar. It's pretty clear that nobody's been prosecuted with that either, because the Garda were pretty clear from the get-go, because there were simultaneous bombs, that the Glenane gang, which planted them, and none of these people have ever been arrested, got their bombs and their instructions from MI5, and that's those people went right to the top. Now, basically, intelligence services basically do terrorism. It's one of the things they do.
Yeah.
And that includes the British intelligence services.
Do you know one of the really suspicious things about the Dublin and Monaghan bombings was the lack of reaction in the Republic?
Well,
the authorities in the Republic seemed to treat this as a warning from Britain.
That's right.
And they didn't, you know...
And they brought in Section 30, they brought in lots of repressive legislation against the Republicans on the back of it.
Yep.
Now, that's why, for example, Sri Lanka may have been given this warning, don't do deals with the Chinese.
Yep.
Otherwise, you could have loads of dead bodies on your hand. Think about it. And, of course, there's a kind of mafia-style thing going on behind the scenes, where the Sri Lankan intelligence service is probably pretty well aware who's done this, and they understand what the message is. Don't do deals with China.
Could it be, actually, that this is peripheral to a central coming war, potential war anyway, in the Middle East?
Because we've been talked into a war with Iran. The sanctions on Iran, which were waived, are about to kick in on the 1st of May, I believe. Now, the Iranians, if they're not allowed to sell their oil, have said quite clearly they're going to close the Straits of Hormuz. And at that point, the US Navy will have to try and open the Straits of Hormuz, and it's off we go. Now, that's what we're on the track for that right now.
We've had, actually, in the last show, we discussed the US government categorising the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terrorist organisation, and then in exchange the government, in fact the parliament in Tehran, saying that
CENTCOM
is a terrorist organisation. Now, we never hear about CENTCOM. I haven't ever heard them mentioned on the BBC or the CNN or any of the rest of them. Who is CENTCOM?
Well, it's
why might they be called a terrorist organisation?
Well, CENTCOM is, the US military have got, as you say, they're surveying everybody, but they break the world up into areas. And CENTCOM is Central Command, and that's the Middle East. And they basically have been fomenting wars in the Middle East for quite a long time. And it's not unreasonable for the Iranians to say, well, hang on a minute, you're the terrorists. They're the ones behind ISIS and Al-Qaeda operating in Syria, who've killed tens of thousands of people. They've been funneling jihadis from all over the world into Syria. And, of course, we've been helping to do that. But MI6 have been major players in this for years and years and years. They were the lead agency on Operation Cyclone. They went to Libya and they recruited loads of people in Benghazi. They were trained by the SAS and they were sent into Afghanistan. And of course, they then moved around to do other things. When they lose in Syria, when they won in Libya, loads of people, Abdul Hakim Belhaj, taken directly to Syria and then became a Free Syrian Army stalwart, all orchestrated by our intelligence services right here in Blighty.
Now we're going to look over at Derry at the murder on Maundy Thursday of Lyra McKee, and that came up in the Commons on Wednesday.
Mr. Nigel Dodds.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Speaker. And to go back to what the Minister started with in this session, in a few minutes the funeral of Lyra McKee will begin in Belfast, and the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition are both present, rightly. So, and we extend our deepest sympathies to her partner Sarah and to her family and friends at this terrible time. And the message across Northern Ireland is that violence is not acceptable and will never succeed, never has been acceptable and never will. And will the Minister agree that the utterly repulsive statement from those who carried out this terrible atrocity, that somehow the murder of police officers is totally legitimate and it was just an accident that Lyra was killed, that in standing with Lyra today, we stand with everyone, journalists, police officers, all who serve the community in Northern Ireland. An attack on any one of them is an attack on us all.
Minister!
Mr. Speaker, I agree with every word that the Right Honourable Member has said. I thought that the finest riposte to those sickening claims by the terrorists was that there in the Creggan estate in Derry, the leaders of both the Democratic Unionist Party and Sinn Féin came together, putting aside the real differences between them, to reject the path towards violence and terror. The joint statement by all party leaders in Northern Ireland rejecting terrorism, and the visible expressions of both grief and anger towards the terrorists by the communities of both nationalist and unionist in the city of Derry, Londonderry, has been a visible but also the most compelling, moving riposte to the evil claims of those behind that terrorist act. Those political leaders, those communities in Derry, spoke for the reality and for the heart of the people of Northern Ireland.
Thank you.
That's David Lidington there, standing in for Theresa May at Prime Minister's Questions. Kevin, what do you make of this killing?
Well, this doesn't excuse what happened, even indirectly, but Derry as a city has been robbed by the unionists for decades. I went to a university that should have actually been set in Derry. It was set in a market town called Coleraine instead. But then the United Kingdom has been seriously remiss in neglecting the Creggan estate in particular. It's a dump because there's no investment, nothing. We are accidentally giving succor to the bad guys.
But what about the PSNI fishing operation that took place on Thursday evening? This is what bothers me the most. They didn't actually find anything, but they were banging on doors, I imagine smashing a few doors down, of the Republican community. This is what caused the disturbances which led to this woman's death. I mean, just what the PSNI, what are they up to? This just sounds like sectarian return to the bad old days by them.
I'm not sure about this. I mean, I have been party to discussions within the British Army when I was part of it years ago, which we said to each other that these raids by us are just recruiting for the other side. It's mad. Going around kicking in people's doors and everything.
So why are the PSNI doing it last Thursday?
I don't know. I'm not
Martin,
sure. Martin, do you have a
theory? I don't know. I think it's unfortunate that, obviously, I agree with everything that's been said. I think what I'd say about the new IRA boys is that there was a general understanding from the 60s onwards that if there's a riot going on, you don't shoot at soldiers and army during a riot, because otherwise they're going to shoot back and they're going to hit civilians, which is exactly what, you know, and therefore there was an absolutely standing order. If there's a riot, and that's why the riots were banned for years in Republican areas. They stopped the lads from rioting because it's just too dangerous, but once in a while they would have a proper riot. There was a girl shot dead at a roadblock before the ceasefire. I think it was after the ceasefire, but it was before the agreement. And she was shot dead at a roadblock. The whole community was absolutely boiling mad. She'd been shot. She was joyriding. Silly stuff, you know. But anyway, the army had shot her. And of course, they said, right, tonight we're going to have a riot. But we're going to run it. And there was a proper riot. They hijacked buses. There was loads of petrol bombs, stone and all that stuff. But you don't do shooting in a riot situation. Because you don't. And if the real new IRA boys, as they call themselves now, think that's the way you do it, that's not how you do it. That's never the way to do it.
Okay, what about power sharing? Because it looks like one thing that may come out of this is that we start to see Stormont opened again and talks finally starting after the Lyra McKee murder. The Mirror's just announced it comes more than 2 years after power sharing collapsed in January 2017. Now, watching Channel 4 News this week, Kevin, it was pretty clear that the unionists wanted the talks and Sinn Féin didn't want to talk about it. But that may have changed by now.
This, I think both sides, Sinn Féin and the unionists, are incredibly at fault. Well, you know, it took an enormous effort to get Stormont started at all, and to walk away from it, it suited both parties.
It was all very convenient because during Brexit, none of the awkward backstop got discussed over in Stormont at all, did it? Whilst the DUP are holding the balance of power in Westminster, they don't want anything going on behind their backs over in Stormont.
Well, the DUP are not stupid. They take money very seriously, apart from anything else. Well, we've seen that, because how much does it cost Theresa May to bribe them?
£1.5 billion.
But they are also conscious now that the tide is... The ordinary public in Northern Ireland have had it with politicians, you know, ranting on the radio, ranting on TV, and no Stormont. And I think... I'd like to go with you there and hope that Sinn Féin and the DUP get together and reopen Stormont.
Well, today, that looks like it might be happening. Sinn Féin's leader in Northern Ireland, Michelle O'Neill Martin, said the talks had to deliver on rights-based issues so that all people in the province are treated equally. And then one of the particular concerns of Sinn Féin is Irish language and you know, that being implemented as an option, at least for people in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, as we know in Wales, signposts are in both languages, even though only a small minority speaks Welsh. It's not a big issue, but for the unionists, it's a sticking point or whatever. Can I say that what you've got to recognise this for Sinn Féin is that participation in Stormont is a concession by them to the British. Yeah? And therefore, they've got to be given give us something why we should participate in your parliament. Don't forget, the Irish Republican goal for many, many years was to smash Stormont and have a united Ireland and everybody elected to the Dáil. So participating in Stormont was a big concession by them. Now, if we're going to make that concession, what are you going to give us? Talking about the Creggan estate. How much of that £1.5 billion that she got from, that they got from Theresa May is going to be spent in the Creggan?
Finally, on Lira, Martin and then you, Kevin, why has not the PSNI inspector or superintendent in charge of those fishing operations the night she died, why hasn't he come on television, apologised and resigned?
Well, because what's happened with the death of this young woman is that the police, in a sense, you know, they've got a buy out of this one. If she hadn't been shot and it had just been a riot, then it would have just been a riot, and of course the new IRA could have scattered. They've got three councillors, I understand, elected. They could have backed up. They could have worked. This has actually shot them. They've shot themselves in the foot here. I mean, the good news about this is this will finish them.
Yeah, I think you're being too pejorative. I mean, the police officer in charge, I doubt very much if he realised they would actually be fired on. Knowing how I spent a lot of time in Northern Ireland.
But they were looking for guns, weren't they? They were looking for explosives and guns.
Well, that's what
they found none, but they ended up with one dead journalist. This isn't a great police operation, is it? And it's also a sectarian one.
Yeah, it's... Well, you watched the video, I'm sure, so did I, and it was, you know, this time it was very clear who did the firing. There's only two shots, apparently, and one of them hit her.
But, I mean, you know, why are the police doing sectarian raids? That's what I want to know. Anyway, I'd like to have seen the guy who organised those raids resign. Anyhow, next, before we... everyone seems to have forgotten about Julian Assange, but I'm sure you haven't, Kevin.
Of course I haven't.
And he's now, I think it's the 2nd of May, there's going to be a protest at the court hearing where he appears for the first time in London. And so I thought we'd have a little listen to what Roger Waters from Pink Floyd had to say about him on RT recently, because it is a really important case. And I'll let you come in when we finish hearing from Roger Waters at Pink Floyd, Kevin.
This team at the moment, Bolton and Abrams and Trump himself and Pence and all the rest of them, are desperately trying to pitch the world, the planet that we live on, into the Third World War. Sorry, I'm drifting off Julian, who we should all be focusing on, because he is who the whole world should be focusing on him now. Because if we let the UK get away with allowing him to be extradited to the United States, and we allow the United States government at their whim to torture him and to detain him, possibly for the rest of his life, we will have allowed them several steps further down the road to absolute tyranny and probably the destruction of the planet. That's my view.
Yeah, I mean, what, irrespective of other issues, what Assange has done is show American helicopter pilots murdering unarmed civilians in a crowd.
Reuters men as well, actually, isn't it? Journalists.
Yeah, and the Americans won't join the International Criminal Court, and et cetera, et cetera. But let me bring this down to the crunch point here in the United Kingdom. The United States might be our ally, but it's got 67% of our population, including children, under criminal and illegal surveillance. So why are we extraditing anybody to the United States? They are a criminal at the administrative level. The United States government is engaged in criminal misconduct in our country against kids. So why are we extraditing anybody?
Well, obviously, Julian Assange, as an individual, the way they've tried to sort of, you know, blacken his character, you know, he's a dirty squatter, blah blah blah.
Well,
absolutely,
no, actually,
disgusting.
Your party, the majority of MPs, are saying that he should be extradited to Sweden. Well, and MPs have also, including Thangam Debonair, by the way, as MP here, well, is saying he should go to Sweden and he should face charges in Sweden now.
Well, can I just? But what I'd say to that is the Swedes haven't got any charges against him, so I don't know where they're getting that from. The Swedes would have to make some charges. They're not making any, because in actual fact, they looked into the thing years ago. What happened is he had consensual sex with two women. He didn't use a condom either time, and one of the women went to the police and said, he didn't use a condom, I want him to take an AIDS test. And he refused. He should have just taken an AIDS test, but he refused. And that's what this... When all these people go, he's got to answer charges for this and that and the other, they don't even know, well, they don't even know
tweeting,
what the case is.
She was tweeting later on, wasn't she? Or just after she'd been with him. What a cool
great night
guy
she'd had. Yeah, what a great
cool
night
guy.
She'd had. A great night she'd had. Now, the thing is, all of these people are presuming they are thinking that it's the Swedes dropped these charges ages ago, and we've got an email from the British to the Swedes saying, don't you dare get cold feet, because of course we were told all along that Assange's paranoia about being extradited to the United States is just paranoia. He's just a sex pest who needs to go to Sweden, and it turns out as soon as he leaves the embassy, he's on the plane to America, right, not to Sweden.
Can I go back to the original incident? The woman who made the first allegation against him was the Swedish intelligence services liaison with the CIA when she was in Washington.
Yeah, they're not just random people either, are they?
Her first attempt to get Assange into trouble was rejected by the prosecutor, but then another prosecutor was brought in. Now, who is this other guy? This other guy was wanted by the Swedish parliament for granting the American surveillance rights in Stockholm.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You know, they were a honey trap.
I will put a link up to on our show page to the protest. I think it's on the 2nd of May. Where you can find out a little bit about the support groups for Julian, who is actually, I mean, I would say, I don't know if you agree, Kevin, one of the most important investigative journalists and publishers in the world.
The publication of the documents on Iraq was much the same as the Pentagon Papers, vital, because that was a dreadful war. It was based on false intelligence. It's just because Bush and Blair wanted to go to war.
And
so
revealing the use of hacking in order to assassinate people using cars and aeroplanes and using Samsung televisions to spy on everybody that's, even though it looks like it's off, it's not, it's listening to you. This is actually quite useful. I mean, once upon a time, they used to call it, Martin, conspiracy theory. Now, because of Julian Assange, we know it's fact.
We do.
Do you know the most tragic chapter in anyone's book about the Iraq War? There's an American journalist, very distinguished, called James Bamford, who writes predominantly about the National Security Agency. There's a chapter called, in the end of his book. His book is called The Shadow Factory. And there's a chapter at the end where he describes what the American army had to do to fill the ranks for Iraq. They emptied the jails, they emptied the drunk tanks, and they hauled in the unemployed, gave them guns, and sent them to Iraq with orders to kill. That's an American ex-serviceman.
If you're an EU citizen living in the UK, you will need to apply to the EU Settlement Scheme. This means that the rights you currently have will be protected after the UK leaves the EU. The scheme is fully open, and you have plenty of time to apply. It is free. To find out more and to apply, visit gov.uk/EU settlement scheme. Irish citizens or those with valid indefinite leave don't need to apply.
So we're going to hear now from author David Livingstone. He's in Northern Canada, and he is just brought a new book out. I mean, he was on the programme that we were taking to Ofcom about back last November, and this is his new book. It's called Ordo Ab Caio, and here he talks about Donald Trump and the Book of Revelation.
So the Book of Revelation is the last book to have been accepted into the New Testament canon. It wasn't accepted until the 4th century AD, and after a lot of debate, there was a lot of very reputable Christian fathers who rejected it, and it's only near the year 400 or so that it finally was accepted as part of the New Testament canon, but there's still people who were opposed to it. And the problem is that there was this rumor that the Book of Revelation was actually authored by a Gnostic named Corinthus. So the funny thing is that this is exactly what Albert Pike says, that the Book of Revelation was written by Corinthus. And that he says, like, right out in the open, he says it in the, you know, I think it's pretty close to the opening of the book, he says that the Book of Revelation is a Kabbalistic coded book. It is basically the blueprint for the what the Masons call the Great Work. So the Great Work, the magnum opus of Freemasonry, the craft. The Masons are builders who are building the third temple, which right. is the fulfillment of the prophecy of the Book of Revelation, because the Messiah can only come when the third temple is completed. Trump is seen today by right-wing Zionists and, of course, their dupes, the right-wing Christians in the United States who voted him in. Trump is seen by them. They see both Trump and Putin as the Cyrus figures who are going to allow or create the circumstances that will permit the reconstruction of their temple. And right. first, of course, Al-Aqsa has to be destroyed because that's the location.
Now, I mean, I'm not subscribing to what he's saying there, Kevin, but I mean, it's certainly an interesting idea that the Book of Revelation, I mean, he's saying this Book of I don't think there is anything actually in the Book of Revelation that says you've got to build a third temple in order to evoke a Jewish Messiah. But it does, what he's talking about, I think, which I find so fascinating, is this is the sort of recipe that a lot of the Christian Zionists are using to justify things which are basically just walking all over international law, saying things like, oh, well, the Golan Heights is Israeli, and that we're going to have the US Embassy in Jerusalem.
Yeah, the Book of Revelations was essentially condemned by the Catholic Church. When we were in our schools and everything, we were discouraged from even reading it. And quite often, your copy of the Bible arrived without the Book of Revelations in it. The private theory in the Catholic Church is that St. John was on an early form of LSD. It's a book written by a maniac.
And it's a vision, isn't it? It's a vision of the future, and it's obviously an apocalyptic vision.
Well, I mean, if you've actually read it, it's beyond, it's, you know, it is LSD waffle. Either that or he was drunk. I mean, you get the same effect.
Okay, well, in the second clip we got from David Livingstone, here he talks about something which is a bit maybe more up-to-date, which is the Clinton family and Iran-Contra and the origins of white supremacism. This is all from his new book, Ordo Ab Caio.
I used to think that Clinton was higher up, especially when you consider that her husband was right in the thick of it in Mena, Arkansas, which was the central hub of the entire Iran-Contra operation. So Iran-Contra, you know, was the most significant modern conspiracy that really interlinked all the important players. It was a conspiracy that was designed to raise funds to pay bin Laden in his fight against the Russians. But, you know, I was shocked to find out that how this parallel trajectory that brought Trump to power was under the radar all this time. And so this right-wing history is really, it's a lot of what I was beginning to scratch at in my book called Black Terror, White Soldiers, but it really completes the other half of the story. It goes back to, first of all, you're founding the United States, right? So if we're talking about the Sabbatian movement was created by the Rosicrucians. And it's not an accident that he declared himself Messiah in 1666 because it was a deliberate fulfillment of the Book of Revelation. And so what happens is that, you know, the Rosicrucians basically come on the scene in 1614, 1619, somewhere around there, and they try to elect their candidate as king, and which ignites the 30 Years' War. It basically destroys the movement. They all flee. They run to England. They found Freemasons, and a number of them go to Holland, and in Leiden in particular. And from there, they jump on the Mayflower and hop across the pond and go and found the several colonies in the United States, particularly the Massachusetts Bay Colony and Salem, Massachusetts, of course. If you can catch, would know what that means. Mm-hmm. And so the Mayflower was a Rosicrucian mission. The Puritans were basically a Rosicrucian movement. And when they say they were escaping persecutions, they were Kabbalistic heretics who were looking to practice their occult brand of Christianity more freely in the United States. You know, the sort of separation of church and state, which has been created here as deliberately as a way to provide a haven for Kabbalistic occult Gnostic variations of religion to rise, you know, unhindered. Then I jump ahead and basically you get the founding of Scottish Rite Freemasonry in Charleston. So you have seven Jewish Masons who come to the United States and found the southern jurisdiction of Scottish Rite. And then Albert Pike becomes its leader. So first of all, to understand white supremacism in the first place, it's a Kabbalistic idea. It starts in the 1700s in Europe. Mostly scholars, the only one I can remember off the top of my head is Friedrich Schlegel. What happens is that when the British basically take hold of India, then European scholars kind of have more access to a lot of the Hindu history and literature. They discovered that they believe they discovered that there's a relationship between Sanskrit and German in particular in European languages. Came up with this hypothesis that there must have been a parent language, which they called Indo-European. So the funny thing is that this idea is still, the concept still exists today. The concept of a Caucasian people is still accepted today. Most of the exoteric aspect of this story is still popular. What's not known is the occult origin of that idea. And the idea is that it was the Aryans. The Aryans were offspring of the sons of God of the Bible who intermarried with human beings and created the race of the Aryans on Atlantis. This is all intertwined with two things, the legends of the lost tribes and Gog and Magog. Well, I'll get into that. The idea that they're blind and blue-eyed is core to their belief system, right? It's the whole point is that this is supposed to be a semi-divine race, carriers of ancient wisdom. So when Atlantis sank, they escaped and landed in the mountains of Asia, particularly the Caucasus Mountains. They spread from there, and they carried with them the ancient wisdom. So this created what they called the Oriental Kabbalah. And what they believed is that these original Aryans, so this was, you know, 100 or more years before Blavatsky developed this idea. This was one of the streams in Scottish Rite Freemasonry, an idea that was disseminated by Swedenborg, Manuel Swedenborg, who happens to have been very cozy with numerous Sabbatians. He was raised by Sabbatians. He was affiliated with Count Zinzendorf, who was a Sabbatian as well, too. Swedenborg was a neighbor with Samuel Jacob Falk, Rabbi Falk, who was basically the figure behind late 18th century Freemasonry, and a Sabbatian to boot. So Swedenborg was promoting this idea of an Oriental Kabbalah. And this is the idea that long before the Jews had the Kabbalah, the Aryans were the true origin of Kabbalah that they had planted in the East, particularly in Tibet. And this is where you get ideas like the Kalachakra Tantra and so on and so forth.
This is David Livingstone from his new book, which is entitled Ordo Ab Caio. But the thing is, this is now being sort of weaponized by Christian Zionists. And I thought we'd have another clip from John MacArthur, who's a pretty scary Christian Zionist character.
When the Mahdi arrives, he will discover hidden scriptures.
The Mahdi is the so-called prophetic savior in the Islamic texts.
And there will be there hidden scriptures, hidden gospels, and a hidden Torah. And they will be the true scriptures which will be used by the Mahdi to show the Jews and the Christians they were wrong. That their scriptures were the false scriptures. Let me summarize. The Mahdi will be a messianic figure. He will be a descendant of Muhammad. He will be an unparalleled, unequaled leader. He will come out of a crisis of turmoil. He will take control of the world. He will establish a new world order. He will destroy all who resist him. He will invade many nations. He will make a 7-year peace treaty with the Jews. He will conquer Israel and massacre the Jews. He will establish Islamic world headquarters at Jerusalem. He will rule for 7 years, establish Islam as the only religion. He will come on a white horse with supernatural power. He will be loved by all people on earth. If that sounds familiar, that is a precise description of the biblical Antichrist. Absolutely, step by step by step by step. The Bible's Antichrist is their Mahdi. We know that the rider on the white horse in Revelation 6 is the Antichrist. They use that verse to describe their Mahdi. Why am I giving you all this? Because the description of the Mahdi is exactly the description of the biblical Antichrist, the beast of Revelation 13. And you go into any kind of a study of that and you will find that all the details match up perfectly. The Bible's Antichrist is Islam's savior.
Well, that's a Christian Zionist hate preacher, John MacArthur. Kevin, it sounds plausible, but actually what he's saying is he's doing the classic thing, which is a bit of speculation, a bit of interpretation of the Bible. He's there presenting it as fact. And in fact, what he's doing is he's trying to present to Christian Zionists that all of Islam is a massive demonic force.
Yeah, you don't have to read the Book of Revelations regularly, because we used to sneak read it because it was forbidden. But to realize the guy who wrote it was off his head. Now, this is 2,000 years later, and this guy you've just played is throwing up bits of a book that was crazy in the first place.
Okay, well, anyway, look, from the sublime to the ridiculous,
mad.
Because I did come across this stuff from David Icke recently about the moon, so I thought it would be interesting to listen to that. Just contrast. I mean, I'd like to see the mainstream media sorting some of this stuff out, because there's so much of these sort of conspiracy literature out there, some of which may make some sense, others is poisonous, and others is just plain crazy.
And the truth is, and honest scientists will tell you, they have no clue where the moon come from, and it shouldn't, by physics, be there. This guy, Isaac Asimov, a Russian professor of biochemistry, did a lot of writing on this sort of stuff, and he said this, quite rightly, "We cannot help but come to the conclusion that the moon by rights ought not to be there. The fact that it is one of those strokes of luck almost too good to accept. Small planets such as Earth with weak gravitational fields might well lack satellites. In general, then, when a planet does have satellites, those satellites are much smaller than the planet itself." Some scientists don't even talk about a planet-satellite relationship, but a planet-planet relationship. The moon's bigger than Pluto. The best explanation for the moon is observational error. The moon doesn't exist, that scientist said. Another one from NASA: "It seems easier to explain the non-existence of the moon than its existence." And then we get the hollow moon. This is what I'm saying, and others have said, is that it's a hollowed-out planetoid. In November 1969, the moon was hit by a lunar module to the equivalent of 1 ton of TNT. The shock waves built up, and NASA scientists said the moon rang like a bell. Morris Ewing, a co-director of the seismic experiment, told the news conference, "As for the meaning of it, I'd rather not make an interpretation right now, but it is as though someone had struck a bell, say in the belfry of a church, a single blow, and found that the reverberation from it continued for 30 minutes. A guy called Gordon MacDonald said in the early 1960s, "It would seem that the moon is more like a hollow than a homogeneous sphere." And this guy from MIT said the lunar orbiter experiments had vastly improved knowledge of the moon's gravitational field and indicated the frightening possibility that the moon might be hollow. A launch vehicle struck the moon with the equivalent of 11 tons of TNT. A NASA scientist said the moon reacted like a gong and continued to vibrate for 3 hours and 20 minutes to a depth of up to 25 miles. Ken Johnson, a supervisor of the Data and Photo Control Department during the Apollo missions, told Who Built the Moon author Alan Butler that the moon not only rang like a bell, but the whole moon wobbled in such a precise way that it was almost as though it had gigantic hydraulic damper struts inside it. These two Russian scientists from the Soviet Academy of Scientists wrote an article in 1970 in Sputnik magazine in Russia headed, "Is the Moon the Creation of an Alien Intelligence?" And all these years later, it indicates to the fact that they were right. What they point out, and others point out, is the outer surface of the moon is extremely hard and contains minerals like titanium. Moon rocks have been found to contain processed metals, including brass and mica, and the elements uranium-236 and neptunium-237 that have never been found to occur naturally. It is more likely that what we have here is a very ancient spaceship, the interior of which was filled with fuel for the engines and materials and appliances for repair work, navigation instruments, observation equipment, and all manner of machinery. In other words, everything necessary to enable this caravel of the universe to serve as a Noah's Ark, appropriate, of intelligence, perhaps even as the home of a whole civilization, envisaging a prolonged thousands of millions of years existence and long wanderings through space thousands of millions of miles.
Well, the moon rang like a bell, apparently. But, I mean, we're maybe being a little bit toxic this evening, mixing up fact and speculation too much there. But somebody in the mainstream press has got to sort of sort this stuff out for us, Kevin.
Yeah, the efforts being made currently to sort of limit false news, the social media are, and this is very few people want to accept it, are the people. And the people are a pretty raucous lot. So damping them down is not a good idea.
Okay, time to sign off for the US-owned Comcast News at 8 now. Thanks to our guests in the first hour, Estella Ticknell. You'll find this show's podcast, story links, comment page. Do please comment there. Anything to comment about our clips, particularly those last few, and our contact details at thisweekoneword.org.uk. I'm on Twitter and at Tony Gosling. Do please join us for the politics show at 6 o'clock next week. God bless, and don't let the banksters get you down.
Live from the Sky News.